case for argument is 21-2077, Carter v. McDonough. All right, counsel, how do I say your name?
Dohakis, Your Honor.
Dohakis. Mr. Dohakis, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. On behalf of Mr. Carter, I want to thank this court for the opportunity to present its appeal. We do wish to emphasize, as we did in our briefs, that for the purposes of this appeal only, Mr. Carter does not challenge the factual findings of the board or the court, and reserves the right to and intends to, in the future, challenge these factual matters at the agency as necessary. So this appeal presents a question of statutory interpretation. Namely, we ask this court to decide what Congress meant when it prohibited payment of compensation for an injury that is a result of the person's own willful misconduct. Here, the undisputed facts demonstrate that the actual cause of Mr. Carter's head injury was the excessive...
Can you point me in the Veterans Court decision where you think it made an incorrect legal interpretation as opposed to an incorrect application of the standard to the facts?
Yes, Your Honor. On Appendix 6, at the very last two sentences, balancing this evidence, the board determined that the head injury resulted from, Appendix 7, second to last sentence of the first paragraph. The board applied the correct legal standard, and we can't say that its factual conclusions are clearly wrong. And the legal standard that that the Veterans Court applied here was that the probable consequences of someone's actions are the same as his own willful misconduct.
Where do you get that? It's not here. Is that what's in the board's decision?
There's nothing explicit that
says
that.
So you're making up your interpretation of the Veterans Court decision, but it doesn't say that.
It doesn't explicitly say that, Your Honor. However, the only way that the court could have affirmed the board's decision was to equate the two based on the findings by the board. Now, the board...
Why is that? All they have to determine is, did his willful misconduct cause his injury? And they determined that his injury is a result of his resisting arrest.
That's not what the board said, Your Honor. On page 25 of the appendix, the board specifically found another MP then struck the veteran with a nightstick, resulting...
Can we just stick with the Veterans Court decision? That's what we're reviewing.
We can, Your Honor, but this is the fact that was affirmed
we don't care about the facts that are affirmed because we can't review those.
Correct, Your
Honor. We can't even review the application of the law. You have to show that somehow your legal interpretation that excludes any injuries caused by a third party is a correct legal interpretation.
Yes, Your Honor. And again, going back to the quote that I just referred to on Appendix 7, the board applied the correct legal standard, and we can't say that its factual conclusions are wrong.
Well, we don't get to review that latter part.
No, Your Honor, but we have to understand what those factual conclusions are.
Okay, so can I just understand, under your construction of willful misconduct, is it your view, because on page 25 you sent me to the facts of the case, and what the facts of the case that were found here is during the arrest, he became combative and struck one of the arresting military policemen. Another military policeman then struck the veteran with a nightstick, resulting in his injury. Is your view of the interpretation of willful misconduct that willful misconduct would cover, for example, if the veteran himself broke his hand when he punched the military officer, that injury to his hand would be the result of his own willful misconduct? But is it your view that a construction of willful misconduct does not include the action that was taken that was necessary to subdue him after he struck the military policeman and any injury that resulted from the action that was undertaken to subdue him? Is your view of the interpretation of willful misconduct that it would only apply to him breaking his hand when he punched someone, but it wouldn't apply to any harm he suffered when they subdued him?
Not necessarily, Your Honor.
Help me understand your interpretation of willful misconduct. You do agree that it would at least include the broken hand,
yes,
right?
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Sure.
That's his own willful misconduct.
Right. But it doesn't include actions that were taken that were necessary to subdue him as a result of his resisting arrest. It does not extend to those injuries that he suffered in the course of that? Is that your view of willful misconduct?
For the most part, that is correct, Your Honor. And I think I would caveat that with that the
You're
fact...
You're equating injury with misconduct. But that's not what the statute says. It's injuries resulting from willful misconduct. So it contemplates the willful misconduct. I mean, the board has to make some kind of factual determination that this followed as a matter of proximate cause. You know, that's a factual determination, or at least an application of law to fact. We can't review any of that. But are you saying that in order to avoid having to pay compensation, the conduct, the action that caused the injury has to be the veteran's own action?
Yes, Your Honor.
But the statute doesn't use that terminology. It uses the term willful misconduct, which is a broader term.
The willful misconduct, Your Honor, forms the basis for determining how to identify what caused the injury or disease. So the key term, because the phrase that's in the statute, Your Honor, is that the...
Let me ask you another hypothetical. Say that the service member is at some kind of like bar on base, assuming there's anything that's covered by the in-service thing. Well, I don't want to get in a fight about whether it's in-service or not. And he throws the first punch, and the second punch comes back and breaks his jaw.
Yes,
is that second punch not the result of his willful misconduct?
No, Your Honor.
So you're equating injury with willful misconduct?
No, Your Honor. I think that...
Well, why not? Because clearly getting punched in the face when you threw the first punch is a result of your willful misconduct.
It is not, Your Honor. It is the result of the other person making a free will choice to respond. We do not have to respond when somebody punches us.
Yes, but isn't it, if you use just general proximate cause language, if you start a fight, you're likely to get punched in the face.
Yes, Your Honor. That is a probable
That's
consequence.
That's a proximate cause of your willful misconduct. Isn't that all the standard is?
No, Your Honor. I think...
Where in the statute or where in the legislative history does it suggest it's tighter than that?
We didn't get into the legislative history here, Your Honor, but when we look at the plain words, as we outlined in our brief, this exact phrase has been interpreted by the Supreme Court at least twice, and once in the context of another veteran's benefit statute. And in Brown v. Gardner, they said that the phrase, as a result of, means that it must be the direct cause of. And in Barrage...
But that doesn't exclude external causes.
We think it does, Your Honor.
Well, doesn't the statute refer to the proximate cause? Doesn't it mention proximate cause?
No, Your Honor.
The
statute does not.
The regulation
uses a proximate cause, but only with respect to, if you look at, I believe it's C3 of the regulation, it talks about the proximate causation in with respect to determining what is willful misconduct. And that's where the key differentiation is. When we look again at 1151, after Brown v. Gardner, the Congress amended that statute and kept in the language of result of treatment by the VA. And then we also see a proximate cause requirement later on in that statute. We don't see the distinction
so
here.
So proximate cause doesn't apply to this situation, but
no, Your Honor.
Causation doesn't
No, Your
apply.
Honor. Only with respect to determining whether the willful misconduct occurred and determining whether the veteran's behavior, actions, conduct was in fact willful. That's what we define in 3.1N.
I understand. In 3.1N3, it says willful misconduct will not be determinative unless it is the proximate cause of the injury. Why isn't his willful misconduct in this case the proximate cause of his injury? He resisted arrest. In order to subdue him, they had to take an action that ultimately caused him harm. Whether that harm came in the form of them holding his arms behind his back and they maybe dislocated his shoulders in an attempt to stop him from continuing to punch them, or whether it came in the form of them having to use a nightstick to subdue him after he had already punched them. Why isn't the result of his injury, no matter what the form of the injury was, a result of his willful misconduct?
A couple points on that, Your Honor. Number one, I would say that if he were being subdued and he were attempting to break away and was injured, that would be, I would think, more closely the result of his own willful misconduct. However,
that's what the facts are in this case. The facts are in this case that he was resisting arrest, that he took a swing and hit one of the MPs, and then another MP struck him. So the facts are he was resisting arrest.
But the resisting arrest did not cause, was not the, the cause of his injury. The cause of his injury was the MP.
This is a proximate cause determination. And clearly, resisting arrest is a proximate cause. There may be other causes, but this doesn't say the sole cause or anything like that. This refers to a basic tort principle. And no jury in the world would say resisting arrest and getting hit by a nightstick is not a proximate cause of resisting arrest, right? We're not looking at a variant notion of causation. They actually use the word proximate cause.
The statute does not use proximate cause, Your Honor, and that's the basis of our...
Yes,
Your Honor, but again, the regulation focuses on defining and determining whether the conduct was willful. And so...
Is your view that this regulation is inconsistent with the statute?
No, Your Honor. We're not challenging the regulation in any way. All we're saying is that the regulation only addresses willful misconduct and does not extend to as a result of, and the reason we know that is because the statute does not use any kind of language that that implicates proximate causation. And in Brown v. Gardner and Barrage, the Supreme Court, looking at this precise phrase of, and
but if the lower tribunals concluded that his willful misconduct is the proximate cause of the injury he suffered by virtue of being hit with a nightstick, why isn't this case over?
But that's not what the lower tribunal found, Your Honor.
Actually, it laid out how the definition of willful misconduct talked about probable consequences and must be the proximate cause of the injury or disease. Then it went through and said when the other MP struck him, it looks to me like they've made a finding to that extent.
The finding, Your Honor, that we're relying on, again, on Appendix 25, the other MP struck the veteran with a nightstick, resulting in the aforementioned head injury. So the MP smashing his skull in with a nightstick is what caused his injury.
But his willful misconduct is what caused that injury to occur.
No, Your Honor. The MP's actions are what caused the injury to occur.
There can be more than one proximate cause.
Yes, Your Honor. But again, our argument focuses on the fact that the statute is very specific when it uses the phrase "a result of," as defined by the Supreme Court in those two cases. That is a direct causation and not proximate causation.
Wait a minute. Look at Barrage. You referred to Justice Scalia's opinion in Barrage, and the quote is, "It makes little sense to say that an event resulted from or was the outcome of some earlier action if the action merely played a non-essential contributing role in producing the event." There's no dispute here. This was more than a non-essential contributing role, right? Based on the findings here that you can't tell.
Based on the findings,
okay. So I don't understand how Barrage using helps you.
Because the ultimate holding in Barrage was that it requires a direct causation and not a proximate causation. And so when that phrase "a result of" or "the result of," as in these three different cases, ours and the two Supreme Court cases, the same phraseology, the same words, should be consistently interpreted to require a direct causation as opposed to a proximate causation.
So we're not supposed to follow what Justice Scalia says, is that we ignore it if it's a non-essential contributing role. that standard doesn't apply to us because, what, it's dicta?
Or... No, Your Honor, I think that should be read in the context of the facts of that case as opposed to what the ultimate holding is. And
don't we read the holding as a result of the facts of this case, for the case?
You do, Your Honor, yes. But Barrage, again, should be read in the context of how it was presented to the court there.
Okay, counsel, you're into your rebuttal time. Yes. Let's save some. Let's hear from the government. Mr. Carhart, please proceed.
May it please the court. I will begin with the merits where my friend Mr. DeHakwa has left off. To accept Mr. Carter's argument here, the court would have to conclude that Congress departed from traditional principles governing causation in enacting the relevant statutes here, and instead imposed a sui generis requirement that a veteran's disability results from willful misconduct only when it's the immediate cause of the veteran's
injury. Is it the government's position that as a result of, I mean, that this argument just wasn't preserved, the argument that your friend seems is making today about as a result of the construing that, that the board misconstrued it, or is it your view that even if that were the argument, we don't have jurisdiction because it's application of law to that?
Both, Your Honor. So first, the argument wasn't.
You have to pick one. I mean, the two are not consistent.
Right. There. So let me start from the beginning. So first, the court's jurisdiction over this issue would extend only to the very narrow addressing whether there's this very narrow legal principle that says no matter what, under any circumstances, it can never be the case that unless something is the last link of in the causal chain, unless misconduct is the last link in the causal chain, whenever there's any additional link, it is always the case that there's no the misconduct did not result in injury. So the court would have we don't dispute the court had jurisdiction if that were a legal principle. The problem is that argument was not raised before the Veterans Court. The focus of the Veterans Court was on factual weighing of evidence issues and not the meaning of the word result in that statute.
I'm still having a hard time understanding the veteran's argument. Is it, in your view, is he arguing that as a result of willful misconduct means that the injury can only result from the veteran's physical actions and can't be the result of somebody other's physical actions, even if it's a result of the underlying willful misconduct?
That's how we understand the argument. So if there's any link in the causal chain separating what the veteran's doing from the veteran's disability, then...
So if he's in a bar fight and he punches somebody and breaks his hand, he can't get compensation for that. But if the person punches him in the face in return for him punching him, his view is he can get residuals for the face, but not the hand.
That,
even though they're the result of the same willful misconduct, which is engaging in a assault.
Yes, judges, that's how we understand the argument. And our response to that is two or three or several fold. One is it's inconsistent with traditional principles of causation as reflected in tort law and other bodies of law. It's inconsistent with the Barrage decision, as Judge Prost's questions seem to suggest. The Barrage decision says, in essence, it quotes the restatement first of torts and says we expect that Congress is using the standard meaning of the phrase or the word result. And in the context of the law, Congress legislates against the
What if he weren't resisting arrest here? What if we had just a simple case of like over-aggressive policing or police brutality, and he did something wrong, so that's willful misconduct, but then he complied with all the commands and stuff, he didn't resist, and nevertheless they hit him over the head and he had an injury. There is some willful misconduct here that maybe at some step led to the arrest and him getting, you know, hit over the head.
Right.
But how would you resolve that?
In that case, the board would apply traditional principles of causation and ask, was the misconduct a approximate cause of the injury?
A probable consequence, right? It would have to be a probable consequence. And that wouldn't be a probable consequence under the hypothetical.
I think that's very possible. Yeah, under the hypothetical that Judge Hughes laid out, it sounds like that's what you're saying is correct. Chief Judge Moore.
Well, what about if it's raining outside and it rains a lot because we're in Seattle and he slips getting into the parole car? Nothing to do with what the police did, but he slips and he hurts himself and he injures himself because of the weather. What then? Is that some proximate cause to his having been arrested in the first place?
So the substantial factor analysis would be what tort law would apply. So it would say, was his misconduct a substantial factor in him slipping? You know, that there's a whole body of tort law developed to deal with situations like this. There are issues of intervening forces and when they become superseding cause.
That wouldn't be a foreseeable consequence of him, you know, getting arrested in the first place, is that he was going to slip getting into it. And I think the answer to that ought to be no.
I tend to agree. But there is a whole body of law that governs situations like this. And ultimately, in determining, as Chief Judge Moore's question suggested, in determining whether a particular conduct is willful misconduct, proximate cause is baked into the analysis there. So I understand Mr. Carter to not be challenging the application of the phrase willful misconduct or how the board and the Veterans Court interpreted the phrase willful misconduct. He seems to be saying the word result is really what his argument turns on. But in determining that there was willful misconduct here, the board and the Veterans Court essentially determined that the injury was a proximate cause of the willful misconduct. So I'm happy to address any other questions the court might have.
Thank you, Mr. Carver. We'll restore 2 minutes of rebuttal time, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have just 3 points. Number one, this is not torts, this is veterans' disability, and we understand that there's a long history and tradition.
Let me ask you this, because let me make sure I understand your legal argument. Is your argument is if the willful misconduct directly causes another individual to undertake an action that causes the injury, that's not covered?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
And again, we point to the statutes. 1131 says that the VA will pay compensation for disability incurred during service. However, the willful misconduct must be the veteran's own willful misconduct. And I think that we're overlooking and passing over this very key and important...
But aren't you, again, conflating willful misconduct with the actual injury suffered? And they're two different things.
They are different, Your Honor, but the result of the veteran's own willful misconduct. The word own requires us to read the statute so that his misconduct alone, not somebody else's, but his misconduct must cause the injury.
In my hypothetical, where he hits somebody and breaks his hand, and the other person, in response, hits somebody and breaks his jaw, the hand's not compensable, but the jaw is?
Correct, Your Honor.
Even though the whole fight is the willful misconduct.
Correct, Your Honor. That's correct. And again, we just ask that we look specifically to the words of the statute. With respect to jurisdiction, Judge Prost,
did you raise this argument below?
Not this specific argument, Your Honor.
I mean, don't you have to raise the legal argument you're making to the Veterans Court before you make them to us?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. And for Shea, of course, we know that we don't even have to raise the issue to the Veterans Court so long as the decision relied upon an interpretation of the statute, which is what happened here.
Okay, counsel, we're out of time. I thank
you, Your Honor.
Counsel. This case is taken under submission.